At a recent party given for the volunteers of Your Virginia Voice, Tom Silvestri, the publisher of the Richmond Times-Dispatch, told those at the party of changes in the business of newspapers. And since these changes affect you, Tom Silvestri joins us on Face to Face on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. As a subscriber to the Virginia Voice, you hear the current day's issue of the Richmond Times-Dispatch read to you each morning. And that's an important service for you of the Virginia Voice. And since you are not at the Virginia Voice Volunteer Party, which is a bonus for those who volunteer to read to you each month, I thought you might like to hear Tom Silvestri's assessment of the newspaper business as it is these days. Tom, give us a recap of the conditions facing the Times-Dispatch.
Well, thank you, Lou, for this opportunity, and hello to all the Virginia Voice supporters. They're a big partner with the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and on behalf of the entire staff, we really appreciate the extension of our business into the lives of many who have supported us over the years and just getting us in a different form, and congratulations to Virginia Voice for doing that. So it was an honor when Virginia Voice asked me to speak to the volunteers, an impressive group, by the way, who are all engaged in making sure that those who benefit from Virginia Voice are receiving information, whether it be news or tidbits about Richmond every day. And it was a different setting for me because normally I'm asked to talk about the Times-Dispatch in general, whatever you want to do. But I've changed the story a little bit because it needs to. And very uncomfortable in the Richmond Times-Dispatch being the news. We're supposed to cover the news. But your question about what's happening, things are changing. And in many cases, my overall message to the Virginia Voice group was that, in essence, traditional newspaper journalism is threatened. And when you just click off some of the business environment we're in, it's a big challenge. And let me just hit some of the high points. It's safe to say that the printed newspaper is in decline based on the advertising revenue and the circulation totals. The supposed future digital is chaotic, and it's controlled by giants who are run by algorithms who are not local. For instance, recently Facebook, one of the major players in the digital world, reported net income of $5 billion for a quarter, up nearly 64%. This while its CEO was testifying and apologizing for what its business was doing. The whole backdrop of our world is divided. So if we take an editorial stand, we're guaranteed to make 50% of the audience mad. Maybe we're trying to figure out that stand that makes 100% happy, but it may be supporting flowers in the spring. I don't know. And you know, it all goes to our financial support system being disrupted. For instance, the big box retailers, which have Richmond as a prime market, have been cutting back as they've been disrupted by the internet and Amazon and all sorts of changes. And sometimes they come up short and they get some of their cost savings on cutbacks in advertising to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And then lately, out of the blue, we're dealing with tariffs, where we're faced with tariffs that are being imposed on Canadian newsprint, which have escalated newsprint prices, which is our second largest cost. And so every time we turn around, if we're fighting revenue battles, we're also fighting expense increases, and it's all about keeping a newspaper afloat. And we've had in Virginia some papers start to go out of business in the Richmond region, three. One was in Hopewell, one was in Ashland, and one was in Caroline, and the rest of the state, too. So the challenges are real, and I want to be careful in the context. I'm not trying to cry wolf. I'm just trying to add context. And many of these failed newspapers or papers that are struggling are down to bare bones on expenses, and you see that in some of their news reports because next to newsprint, the cost of running a professional newsroom is right up there as well. So we have to change, and that was the message. You know, sometimes you have to sell the problems to get people to understand why you're changing, and so that's what I'm doing here. I'm selling the problem. I'm defining the problem so that when folks see our changes or hear our changes, or feel our changes, they kind of understand, some of us have to, in the fact that we're reacting to these huge issues. Some of it is we're trying to be anticipatory about what's coming next, and we may be a little bit ahead of the market, but we have to change. We have to extend the life of the printed paper while reinventing ourselves in a space that demands that we be a technology company, and that's something we are not by any means. And so our parent company, BH Media, out of Omaha, is now working on the technology side while we continue to work on the content side. And we've got a number of new things in the hopper. We have reformatted the newspaper, going back to a four-section front, a four-section format that allow, and also being all local in our first section, continuing the world and national report in the second section. Sports is still on third base. But we've brought back the feature section with its lineup of living, food, weekend, insight, and others that balance out what readers want. So we're not stopping on the newspaper front, but just recently we've reformatted the technical aspect of our website, richmond.com, for faster load times. When you're reading online, there's an expectation that when you click on something, it comes up immediately. And if that little swirling thing, which is either looks like a drain or a washing machine going around and around, occupies you for more than 7 to 10 seconds, you tend to go on to something else because you're impatient. So we have changed a lot of way how our websites are formatted, so that our load times are at least 2 seconds or less, and in the initial 2 weeks we're having some success in that. So working in that as well is making the user experience, the reader experience online, pleasant. And then we're going more into different types of formats, one being newsletters. During the recent General Assembly, we launched a new newsletter called Capital Insider, Political Capital Insider, which basically used a different format and was released at a very unusual time towards the end of the night, that basically summarized the entire day's reportings and news every day during the General Assembly. With the General Assembly not being in session, it's now shifted to weekly. But newsletters delivered via email are a new format. Don't have a truck and don't have a box, and so it shows up in your email box, and it's something we're experimenting and pioneering. Our newsroom has been accepted in an innovation program at the University of North Carolina, and all about reinventing itself and how it delivers. So they're not stopping and learning new techniques, whether it be how news is presented online or different types of storytelling or what topics they go after to sustain themselves. That's new. And we're in the event business. RTD Events just had a very successful spring, where we were mindful of Richmond being a foodie town and had our fifth A Taste of Richmond at the Omni Hotel, had over 400 people there sampling 40-some-odd vendors' ware, learning more about cooking and being introduced to wine and beer that was made in Virginia. Who would have thought? We just also launched a new speaker series called Metro Business Live and engaging the business community with topics of important interest. Our first one was the Me Too harassment stories that are going on. Had two panelists that were just first rate for business people. And we just completed, reinvented the top workplaces, where we pay homage to those workplaces that do things right, handed out over 100 awards, had it at the Altria Theater. It was almost like the Oscars. Had over 600 people there, and people were starting to see a different side of us. And finally, I even hate to say finally, because maybe I should say .. we're pioneering more in video. That seems to be where all the media is going. And we're not just talking about, you know, a one-minute video about some news story. We're talking about documentaries. We're talking about explanations. We're talking about series. And so we've got a team focused on videos, and we've got a couple of innovation projects in the works. And we think this is a future. We still have to deal with perceptions like, well, wait a minute now, aren't you the words people? What are you doing in video? Well, we're in video because that's where the future of storytelling will go. And we've had some real imaginative ones on Richmond.com. I would highlight one by our meteorologist, John Boyer, who explained the recent eclipse using a classroom globe and an onion. You've got to watch it just to see it and or to describe it. So those are just in the opening, Lou. What I wanted to do is set the context via the problem, but not leave the listeners hanging there. Okay, oh my God, what's going on? That we are hard at work, because it really is our work to figure out the future, which will be much different than our 167 years of the past. Although we do want to bring some of those trusted values of journalism, fact-based reporting, and other hallmarks that have kept us in very good company and very good order for many, many, many years, but we've got to learn new things.
You're hearing from Tom Silvestri, the publisher of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Tom, people have been thinking that, well, the newspapers are free. You pay a buck or a buck and a half or 2 bucks for a newspaper, and that's it. But that doesn't pay the cost of the newspaper.
No.
Traditionally, advertisers have paid the cost of the newspaper, and they're disappearing.
Yeah, and the whole value system, the whole model is changing. Years ago, it was 90-10, 90%, 10%. 90% of your revenue that paid for the newsrooms and the newspapers came from advertising, and as it was the days when the newspaper was a mass market. And the other 10% was circulation revenue, but folks probably remember when newspapers were a nickel or a quarter. Your purchase, your enjoyment, was subsidized by advertisers who wanted you to see their advertisers so that you went into their stores or bought their cars or used their services. Over the years, the percentage has changed. It was 80-20, 80% advertising, 20% circulation, but the Great Recession in 2008 really turned everything upside with the continued progression of internet disruptions. And so right now I'm here to tell you that it's probably 55 advertising, 35 circulation revenue or subscription costs, and the rest coming from our Hanover production plant as a commercial printer. Hanover, as other newspapers have abandoned their presses, Hanover has become a production center, and so we print other newspapers. Our biggest commercial printing customer, by the way, is the daily newspaper in Newport News, the Daily Press, and we print them daily on one of our two presses. So it pains me that I have to ask our customers more, and a day doesn't go by in which I'm constantly explaining why did my subscription prices gone up, and some in the last 2 years percentage-wise has gone up. But it's the only way that we can keep a daily newspaper going. It's the only way we can pay for a professional newsroom, which is still the largest in the region, although it's much smaller than it was 10 years ago. And it's the only way that we can balance the unevenness of moving from print to digital, which is not a very smooth transition. Print still is the lion's share of our revenue. And because of that competition I mentioned, and the giants from the Silicon Valley, digital is not a ready-made solution to move into, so we've had to be reinvented.
You mentioned earlier that some newspapers in the area have gone out of business. Some of the local newspapers, you mentioned Ashland and Caroline and some others. How is the Times-Dispatch coping? Some newspapers, large city newspapers, have cut back on the number of days they publish.
Yeah. I say that with, I mentioned the weekly newspapers with great regret and great compassion and empathy for fellow newspaperians. It's not an easy business, and you know it's never been an easy business. I'm in the process of reading the biography on Douglas Southall Freeman, and in the middle part of the section, you know, he writes a letter to his boss at the time, Tenet Bryan, worried about the news leader because of radio. Radio's popularity is hurting the afternoon paper to the point where the editor of the long legendary editor, the author of the Lee and the Washington biographies, is looking ahead. He also was very proficient on radio, did shows during his tenure as the editor. He's worried about radio. So newspapers have always been worried about something. It's just, I think the precipitous drop in print advertising, not and with costs you can't control, and by that I mean the newsprint prices, which are really escalating, is just basically when you're an independent, you have nowhere else to go, and you can't use a credit card and go into debt very long. That's not going to last. So I think margins in some papers have been thin, but readers and advertisers have more choices. And so at the Times Dispatch, we've got to be better at what we do, more so than any time in our careers. An advertiser can go directly to the customer using social media. A reader can get information through their Facebook feeds, relying on their friends to be their editors and selectors. So we've got to battle back with distinction. In other words, our content has got to be material, whether it be news or information or opinions that you haven't gotten anywhere else. And so you're attracted once a day to see what the Times Dispatch is doing. If we're just doing what everybody else is doing, we're not going to survive. We've got to be different in our approaches towards advertisers. We're no longer just selling space, which is the model on the print side. We've got to sell solutions. We've got to go in while talking to our advertisers and basically put a consultative agreement together that identifies what their options are so that when they advertise or when they provide us with content or services, or we provide them with services, we're part of their solutions when they're thinking about adding more customers. So the transactional business has gone to more consultative, and we're putting together presentations that basically analyze advertisers' business and saying, here's where your opportunities are, and you're not just advertising, you're partnering with us, and then we provide data, particularly on the digital side, on what the traffic is showing and where their customers are going, and we're moving them along. A lot of businesses don't have time to be proficient on the internet, and we're trying to be hired as their experts. So we have to compete with many choices. We have to compete with less time, and advertising dollars are diminishing, but marketing dollars are increasing. So we've got to become better marketers in addition to advertisers and figure out this whole game. We have spent a lot of time and effort retraining our advertising department to exist in this environment. And now with this aforementioned special project coming out of University of North Carolina called Table Stakes, which, by the way, is a poker games reference that you got to put in to get out, we're trying to use reinvention in our newsroom as well. So a transformation business cannot rest on its laurels. It can be proud of its history, but that doesn't pay the bills. So we have to carve a new path using innovation, the basics, whether they be common sense or facts, and looking for every other opportunity that we can, and go like heck every day.
Tom Silvestri, throughout this interview, you have been mentioning the changing technology.
Yeah.
And I remember your photographer, Bob Brown, when he transitioned from film to digital, and that was something brand new, and now it's embraced.
Yep.
And video, you mentioned video.
Yeah.
Reporters used to be the traditional view of a reporter, somebody who goes in with a pen and a notepad and takes notes. Now they're going in with cameras?
Yes. Yeah. Well,
that's a new skill that they haven't had before.
Well, you can thank the smartphone for that. And by the way, Bob Brown is still going, 80-plus Brown, over a 45-year career. He's transitioning. He's shooting video. He's doing all these things. Video has been made easy by the technology and the fact that you can record it. All you need is an iPhone or a smartphone to record it. So it's not all on you. We have one reporter, Ned Oliver, who learned how to fly a drone and started to take pictures from a drone. He's got some great shots that we've run. So the technology is such where if that's where everybody is getting their information, it behooves us to learn this technology. I just recently reactivated my Twitter account only because I have a special group down at the Times Dispatch made up of our millennials called the Future Finders, and I've been sitting with them as they've been advising the business about how best to attract their generation, which is all electronic. They're not picking up the newspapers. And, you know, they basically said, you know, you need to get back into the social media game. So every day I get up and I tweet something. I'm after quality, not quantity, but I'm having to relearn how to communicate and how to represent the Times-Dispatch. But the video is a great medium in that it blends the best of two mediums that are powerful. One is the written word that you still need to tell the story. But when matched with the visuals, it actually is another way of being accurate. So, you know, when you read a story, you're counting on the reporter to be your eyes and ears. But in video, when a reporter uses video, you've got we haven't gotten a smell video yet, so you don't have all the senses. But you can hear the news, you can see the news, you can feel the news, and you can listen to the news as being told. So when I say video, I think it offers a lot of potential for us to take what we've done for many, many, many years in a new format and then also learn in real time, and so people can see our collection of stories told on video and stay up with us. Another thing about video, too, is if it's a good video like the eclipse or a story about an unusual business, you could do it, you could shoot it in February, and people still can find it in March, April, May, November, so it has a longer tail where a newspaper might be viewed as more perishable. I'm not going to read that. That's 3 days old. Whereas video extends our story life much more from an archival standpoint than you would think.
Don't cut yourself short here. You do have a way of searching your archives online.
Yeah, and we're proud of that. Our archivist, Nicole Kapatos, is really, really good, along with our toRichmond.com editors, Paul Whalen and Carrie Pfeiffer, who find a way to bring the archives back to life. Who would have thought that one of our biggest photo galleries was old U-crop stores that opened up in the past? But, you know, this is Richmond, and nostalgia is a big thing. But this yin and yang of what's happening today, what's the context in our past, and where we're going allows all of the mediums to live on.
You're hearing from Tom Silvestri, the publisher of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Tom, you mentioned accuracy, and these days there seems to be a campaign to discredit the news media. How can readers know that they are getting accurate reporting?
That's an excellent question. So consider your source. If somebody is discrediting the media, just consider the source. If they're a politician, well, that's to go after watchdog journalism. If it's a business, they may be trying to hide some things that the public needs to know. So I just say consider your source. I have a lot of faith in the readers of the Times-Dispatch to figure it out. As a matter of fact, I try to talk to them as much as possible, whether it be on the phone, in email, in our public forums, at our events. And I have a lot of faith that they can figure it out. They are smart. They have invested in their community by reading about their community. And they're interested. So they're the first call. And we have a pretty good engagement with our readers. When we need to correct something, they let us know. You know, we don't need a government recall to tell us to put a correction on page A2. We usually are told that, research and respond. So this whole notion of fake news on the national level, you can view it two ways. You can get defensive and say, oh, that's just so-and-so, and, you know, he's just trying to get votes, or they're just trying to get our business. Or you can go on the offensive and say, let's make this issue, because it's perceptual, make us better. The only way we're going to defeat it, the perception of fake news, is to be a great steward of fact-based journalism. And now more than ever, fact-based journalism, online you tend to lead with opinions and facts trail. In traditional media, facts are supposed to go first, and then you form an opinion. That's why I have so many people who still go to our editorial page to see what we're thinking, to see whether it messes to what they're thinking, because they've already thought about it, because they've already read the story and are knowledgeable about the news. So if you can get defensive, we're prideful. It hurts us. But you know what? We'll keep listening, see where we're being attacked as an industry, pause, and then figure out how our work can speak for itself. We can say there's no fake news out there. Nonsense, there is. The internet is just a huge sea of information. You have to keep in mind the newspaper and maybe our website are probably one of the most efficient, or even television news or radio broadcast, are utilities. They take the world and boil them down. In the case of newspapers, by the number of pages. In the case of radio, by the time of the broadcast. In the case of television, half-hour, hour segments. They're trying to become a utility to provide you news efficiently and make the best use of your time. The newspaper reader probably spends between 15 and 30 minutes reading a newspaper if they're not retired. Some of the retired have more time and actually are better readers of our product than our employees, and that's why I listen to them. Because they're almost like an independent focus group because they have so much invested in there. And why wouldn't I want to be interested in it? So I think we've got to use this time to make us better, whether it be improving our watchdog journalism when it comes to government or being more analytical and more transparent in how we talk about our communities, but also listening to what our readers want on the type of topics and making sure that what they want matches what we think should be part of the daily report.
Tom, as you have pointed out, there are many sources of information.
Yep.
Radio, many radio stations, television, many channels, social media. You can get all sorts of opinion on Facebook, Twitter, all sorts, and they're perhaps all different. How can they rely on the TD?
Well, first of all, they got to know we exist.
And now, a reporter, let me interrupt for just a moment, because a good reporter takes pride in covering a story accurately.
Correct.
And probably is a little bit miffed when he sees other people discrediting that.
Yeah, and one of the things that's changed for the Times-Dispatch also is that we can't be 100% certain that 100% of the Richmond market even knows who we are. That's a huge change. You know, there was a time, you know, 70s and 80s, in the circulation areas, they use penetration. How many households do you hit? There was a time when we had the morning and afternoon paper that we hit 110% plus of the Richmond household markets, which meant some households, shock of all shock, got both papers. Now that penetration is probably in the 50%, which means there's half of the market that don't even know us. Even though we go to every household with our non-subscriber package, which delivers the advertising inserts twice a week, once on Wednesday and once on Sunday. So we've got to invest more in marketing our message and inviting people in. That's the beauty of our digital improvements, is that our digital subscription is more inexpensive than a newspaper subscription. And theoretically, if that's where the audience is given, if we can make their user experience easier, then we'll get the other audience. But we've got to we have been uncomfortable in talking about ourselves because our product has always spoke for ourselves. In the chaotic world of digital that you just defined, we can't rely on that. So we've got to get into various streams towards the revenue. Like, we got to get in the kayak and paddle like heck on these streams, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Twitter, whether it be Instagram, fill in the blank. And the same token, we've got to constantly talk to, we got to use email newsletters. We just launched the About Us newsletter about the Times-Dispatch, which comes out every other Friday. It lists all the things about what's going on at the TD. It's just another supplemental way of explaining ourselves, and we're having to do that more and more.
Tom Silvestri is the publisher of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Tom, the Times-Dispatch has always supported the Virginia Voice, and you personally have supported the Virginia Voice, and we thank you for that.
Well, my father-in-law was a volunteer. Irving Kurzman was a volunteer at the Virginia Voice during his retirement days, and my mother-in-law had an eye condition that robbed her from reading, and so it's personal. And anything, and because you've made your mission personal with our mission, we'll be long-term supporters of the Virginia Voice, not just because you read the Richmond Times-Dispatch, but you're continually opening the world for our readers and doing it away on their terms, and I want to thank you for doing that.
You're listening to Face to Face on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.